Hey everybody, welcome to Hey Kids Comics Annual Number 2. We are titling this one That Time of Year. It is our annual about annuals. We are already hip.
It is, and it's our second annual, in case Annual Number 2 didn't quite catch your attention.
And we are already hip deep into this conversation, so I'm going to throw it to Cole to introduce our special guest, and we're just going to keep rolling right along.
Yes, indeed. We are very fortunate this year, this annual, this issue, to have with us a local comic. How would I put this? Like the Renaissance man of comics, Weldon Adams. Who welcome to the show, and thank you for bringing your long history in the comics industry with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
A little background. I met Weldon ages ago. Possibly encountered Weldon on the convention circuit and never really, you know, I was aware of him and then really got to know you during a period where you were the field rep. Would that be the correct term for?
Yes, for Acclaim Comics.
For Acclaim Comics. I was racking my brain to remember which imprint.
Yeah.
It was. Yes, Acclaim Comics. Fielded a large number of reps, and Weldon was based out of the DFW Diamond Comic Distributors.
So you guys have a shared interest. Sorry, Weldon. Go ahead. I'm sorry, man.
Oh, I was just saying that was a lot of fun and a really, really good job. They were relaunching the Valiant comics at the time under the VH2 imprint, and there were some hit and misses, but it was a lot of fun.
Excellent. I thought, you know, when we were talking about something that's as far-reaching historically when it comes to comics as annuals, who better to bring on board than Weldon? And in the pre-show discussions, that has more than borne out.
Right. We're just yelling. We're just here yelling right now. That's all we're doing.
There's a lot of fanboy rage going on.
That is so true. We have unearthed so much in thinking back. And one of the prevailing themes is, of course, that back in the early days of my own experience with comics, I'm sure this is true for both of you, the annual used to be a big deal. Like, you know, here's a big story that's just too big to be contained in a single issue.
Right. And it was something that you actually looked forward to.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, precisely.
And I really credit DC with kind of accidentally backing into a good formula for annuals. They were inadvertently doing an annual every year in Justice League. They started out with this crossover with the Justice Society every summer. And it was in the regular numbering of the book, but it was always a two-issue continued story. And I think that they took that idea and kind of started migrating that concept into annuals. You know, let's do a big thing every year in the annuals for all the books.
Well, it's also a great way to... Yeah, it's also just a great way to get a 13th issue out each year.
Right.
Right. Well, and a lot of it really was just financial planning to keep the presses rolling, because there's 52 weeks in here, and that doesn't divide by 4 into 12, equally it divides into 13. So you end up with literally a 13th month. And so they were putting out annuals to keep the presses rolling, so every 4 weeks they had a book come in for that title.
I'd never really looked at it from that specific standpoint, and that is, now that you mention it, it's painfully obvious.
Right.
The annual was a secret 13th issue.
But it also gave us something outside of the obvious, you know, business application of having that issue out there. It gave us something. The annual gave us something as comic book fans that we weren't going to get in the standard run of you know, the issue every month for a year. And that is kind of a story, not necessarily outside of continuity a lot of times, but definitely outside of the arc that they were taking you on, usually, especially in the early days of annuals, where you would get something that wasn't, you know, a part of a particular story arc, or wasn't part of a particular, you know, you get a day in the life story, or a bunch of little vignettes put together, or in my case, my personal favorite, and I've talked about this on the show, my personal favorite annual contrivance was the Avengers West Coast Avengers annual softball game. That
oh yes,
that has always been my favorite way, my favorite vehicle to get two teams together was a a still screen end of Rocky softball game between two superhero groups, and then inevitably Zodiac shows up or something and ruins everybody's fun. But
you can't have nice things.
But early on, we got some really cool stuff. What's the first annual you remember, like, fairly vividly in your brain as something that you were like, that is something that I was into?
They weren't calling them annuals, but DC was doing a whole lot of really cool 100-page specials and 80-page specials that were outside of the regular numbering for the issues. But effectively, they were annuals.
Right on.
And they would have a new story, and then they would reprint stuff. And I was getting exposed to some really fabulous classic Golden Age stories that I'd never seen before. And that introduced me to new characters and new artists and new writers. So that was a real eye-opener for me and very valuable. And I was an avid reader from a very small town. So I would quite literally read anything I could get my hands on. I didn't care if it was Marvel or DC. I was as excited to see Tiger Boy from Seaboard Atlas on the rack as
wow.
There's some pretty amazing stuff, yeah. Cole, what about you?
That's a tough one because I really was in many ways a transient when it came to comics. I remember, you know, when we were kids, there's a story I'm sure I wrote somewhere about my earliest comic book experience. Apart from, you know, you'd pick one up every now and again when you just, you know, you instead of buying a Snickers bar, you'd buy a comic.
Right, right.
You know, because by that time, you know, after a week of Snickers bars, your blood sugar was pretty off the charts. So you decided to scale back for a day and, you know, or 25 cents or whatever it was back in ancient history. But they, you know, I really didn't follow any titles because back then 7-Eleven was your comic book store.
Right. Right.
And I was such an infrequent purchaser. And once the first time I ever really had a collection, as it were, was when my brothers and I, a babysitter, brought us a big, gigantic grocery bags back when they were made of paper and quite sizable, just chock full of old comic books. And that was just like a treasure trove, and you would go and reread them until they fell apart. And I think really it wasn't until Star Wars that I started buying anything on a monthly basis. And it was still a bit of a challenge then because you had to like check two or three 7-Elevens and catch, especially if you missed an issue. But the funny thing is, I was following that title for a long time, and I was at a convention and saw the original art for that was obviously Star Wars. But I asked the vendor, I said, "What is that? I've never seen that." It was a page from Star Wars Annual Number 1. I had no idea such a thing existed.
Right.
So that set me about looking for that, and I would say, you know, probably that, and maybe. If there was an X-Men annual that I happened to catch during the Byrne Claremont years, because it was that during those years that I discovered the X-Men.
Ah.
And also consistently followed something other than Star Wars.
Okay, well that's cool.
But I honestly don't recall any of the annuals during that period, so I probably would just have to say when I finally tracked down a Star Wars annual number 1, because I knew it existed. That was literally my first annual, and it was really cool because it was exactly what an annual should be, a standalone, or used to be, a, you know, kind of a standalone story that was just too big to be contained.
Right.
Yeah.
So what,
too big to be contained stories should have been contained.
Dad, I'll give you that.
For instance, you can't just drop that bomb and not give a for instance. So, for instance, what was one that was too big to be contained?
Well, they started off with, you know, the best of intentions. Somebody discovered the idea of doing these huge intercompany crossover events, and I got real curious about this and started going back to look to see what was the first one. And the first intercompany crossover event that ran through all the annuals specifically that I can find was in Marvel in 1988, and they started off with Evolutionary Wars, and I thought, oh, that kind of blows my theory. They started out with a lemon right there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was definitely...
This wasn't a good idea that went bad. This was a bad idea that never really got good.
A bad idea with some flashes of brilliance. That was about it.
Yeah, and the sad thing is I remember when the Evolutionary War was first hitting. I think through the Marvel Universe guidebook, discovered the High Evolutionary. And I thought it was a fascinating character, at least had that potential. And that was potential greatly lost on Matt Crossing.
Ron Stevens. I remembered some of the annuals that were in there, and the Punisher had an Evolutionary War.
Right.
And I thought, you know, you're very obviously just ticking off boxes on a list here, guys. You had nothing to do with it.
I'm trying to remember exactly what happened there.
The High Evolutionary had gotten into a war with the Knights of Wondergore, if I'm remembering this correctly.
Of course he did.
And, you know, this all happens on a mountain in the Balkans, so of course we're going to drop the Punisher in the middle of that. That just...
Well, that's his, yeah, that's his wheelhouse, right? Like...
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, back then, the Punisher, if there was trouble in the Balkans, he was there.
He had a red phone to the Balkans, so...
Yeah. His whole deal was, I want to stop gangland war, kill criminals, and oh yeah, peace in the Balkans in my lifetime.
Well, I love the fact that because of what the High Evolutionary was doing, like, everybody went after the High Evolutionary because of this. Like, villains, heroes fighting villains, cats and dogs living together, like, the Mole Man, Apocalypse, I'm pretty sure Loki was in there somewhere, it was insane. Like, everybody was like, alright, stupid, the Daredevil and Spider-Man, like, you know, there are tiers of heroes within both universes for a reason. The only one that has ever been able to successfully break those kind of bonds, well, I guess Spider-Man to some extent, but Batman, could cross over into, like, the cosmic, you know, milieu of comics. But you can't drop the Punisher against Apocalypse and expect anything good to come of that.
That's so true. I mean, as much as he might want to stop Apocalypse, I think he's got the good sense to know he's not going to.
Right.
Single-handedly.
So you were saying the next year, Weldon?
Oh, the next year, let's see, Punisher was in Atlantis.
Yes, he was.
And okay, Atlantis did attack New York, so okay, you can kind of see some involvement there. The year after that, Marvel wised up. So they did this 2 years in a row, and then the third year they were doing it changed the battle plan. And that was the year that they started breaking the overarching plot up into family groups. And they had about four different smaller stories that only involved three different books each. And the Punisher was in a story called Lifeform.
And what was it called?
I think you were Lifeform.
Okay.
And I think you were saying something earlier about that. I didn't know who else was in the Lifeform.
Yeah, apparently it was, of all things, it had some companion-type titles that would fit, like Daredevil, I think, and such. And then Silver Surfer. And I don't know if the point was that Silver Surfer was the title Lifeform. That maybe, you know, somebody who was unfamiliar with the long history of Silver Surfer and Earth stumbled upon him and didn't know what he was. And I really am not familiar with that particular storyline. I kind of stumbled on it.
Yeah, no telling.
Oh, there is a telling. It was definitely not Silver Surfer. It was some experimental virus called Lifeform.
Oh, so that would be too big for Punisher alone to handle.
Apparently, when the problem's too big for Punisher, go for overkill. Go for the power cosmic.
Exactly. Well, he wouldn't even sit around and wait to become Captain Universe himself. That, kids?
Wow. Speaking of annuals, I'm pretty sure that was one of the Spider-Man annuals when Spider-Man got to be got imbued with the Captain Universe power, cosmic, whatever that was.
And you know what's ironic is that I'm not just completely off base, and it certainly could be. The Captain Universe originated in Micronauts.
Yep.
I had an inkling there because I was following Micronauts enough to know this somehow.
Yep, he did.
And that was another one of those things we were talking before the show about. I don't think any other licensee, or, you know, licensed title, other than Star Wars, got an annual.
I don't know. I think maybe so.
I'm racking my brain to think if anybody else ever got an annual. Star Wars got three, which is pretty remarkable.
Does Godzilla and Rom not count? Because I'm pretty sure both of those did.
I don't think Godzilla had an annual.
Let's see.
But
they did. Okay, so speaking to life form, at least they did it intelligently. They didn't start with life form fighting the Punisher. Life form started as like one of the Punisher's villains that got exposed, and then the next book kind of stepped it up, and that's why you brought in Daredevil. And then the next book kind of stepped it up, and then the next book he was full on like weird creature from like space mutated thing, and that's why they brought in Silver Surfer.
Okay, yeah, because when you get into the weird mutated space creature, you definitely want to get somebody who's got a familiarity.
Yeah. Which reminds me of, there was an annual series. Yeah, right. There was an annual series called The System Bites. Does anybody remember that from Marvel?
Wow.
Yes, that was that same year.
Where Punisher, Daredevil, Wonder Man, and Guardians of the Galaxy were in it. And that was a kind of a cool idea, too, because that was a computer virus, okay? And it started with Punisher and then Daredevil, and then it went to Wonder Man, and then the computer virus pulls an Ultron Cafe and becomes sentient in the future, and they cross over with Guardians of the Galaxy in the future. Like in super space, out in the... So that's kind of cool. I like that they do that, and they don't just, you know, do the giant... Acts of Vengeance crossover thing. Oh, Acts of Vengeance was the best. Acts of Vengeance was the most convoluted, weird piece of crap ever. It was so good.
And of course, you know, we can't really be beating the drum of the travesties at Marvel without pointing out that DC was as guilty with even just single...
Oh.
You know, perhaps the most guilty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But one...
Yeah, if we want to back up and look over at DC real quick, DC started out with something that was kind of interesting. They would do themed annuals, but they weren't crossovers. So they would give all of their writers a theme. You've got to write an annual that involves this idea, this concept. One year, the whole theme seemed to be have some who's who's entries in the back. Okay, that's easy enough. That's not a problem. Another year, it was called Private Lives, and there was a backup story in every annual that was kind of a out-of-costume story for some character in there. It could be a supporting cast, it could be a main character, but no powers. It was just your private life, what's going on with you. Those were actually really cool. I really enjoyed quite a few of those. But then they followed that up the next year, or just a few years later, with their first big intercompany crossover event, and that is, of course, Armageddon 2001.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It touched
a nerve. Touched a pretty big nerve.
I can't decide which is worse, though. Bloodlines, which was the let's punch up the universe with characters we don't need.
Well,
yeah.
Or
it was worse.
You wouldn't have had Bloodlines if it weren't for Armageddon 2001. So.
That's true.
So you gotta at least...
It's a downhill slope.
Right. And you know why? It's our fault.
They went through Eclipso.
Oh, the Eclipso.
Armageddon 2001, followed the next year by Eclipso, The Darkness Within.
Right.
That was so bad. And then the next year, they said, what can we do that's even worse? Oh, let's do Bloodlines.
Yeah. And Bloodlines was the worst. Like, there were a lot...
It didn't know what it wanted to be when it grew up.
Well, it knew what it wanted to be.
So bad that Marvel wanted one of their own.
Yeah.
The idea, one of the side effects of Bloodlines was that every annual introduced at least one new character that was an offshoot of this alien blood thing going on. And try, if you can, to make them horrible. That seemed to be the goal.
I think they wanted characters they didn't have to own.
Well, what they did was they took I know at least Jim Shooter did. I think Jim Shooter was EIC during this period of time. It would really surprise me if he wasn't. The guys from both teams kind of went into a mall with a team of monkeys and darts, and they lined equal teams up in front of a Claire's and a Hot Topic and just had them throw darts in. And whenever those darts hit, they're like, all right, this guy has the power to make you like Jim Morrison and wear magnetic earrings. All right, the kids like it. Let's do that. That'll be fine. What about this one? Like, that's pretty much what happened. He could turn into a Hummer that likes Duck Dynasty. Sweet! That's awesome. Just run with it. Run with it. Put it in Birds of Prey. Like, what? No! No! Yeah, Bloodline...
During this period, that we really got robbed of a lot of what the annuals could have been.
Well, and the other thing is, if you look at some of the creations in Bloodlines, right? Some of the characters, some of them we had discussed before the show started, worked pretty well. Like they actually came out of the book and survived, which, you know, the law of it's evolution, right? It's how many, what percentage of your creation is going to survive to the next evolved state? Just throw a bunch of things into the world and Hunger Games it, and whoever comes out on the other side gets their own book. But a lot of them, when I'm looking at the list. Right. Yeah. When I'm looking at the book, like the list of books and the list of the new bloods, if they would have just shifted some of the new bloods, if there was some editorial mandate to say, okay, you got to give me the list and their powers, and then I'll tag them with what book they're going to end up in. Like, some of the choices for those particular books would have worked much better in other books. You know.
Right. It was almost like they just had. You know, it was like one of these cooking shows or something where everybody has to walk up and reach their hand in the barrel and pull out whatever they're going to have to cook.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, they weren't doing this toward anyone's strengths.
But the thing is, like, for instance, you had what we were discussing before the show started, that the one character that really came out of this, you know, smelling like a rose was Hitman.
Nice.
Hitman appeared in the Demon Bloodlines annual. What? What? You could have taken Hitman.
And it was a Hitman who gained the powers of telepathy and X-ray vision.
Right. If you would have taken Hitman and put him up against Batman, or up against Deathstroke the Terminator, or up against Green Arrow, or, hell, up against Lobo had an annual that year. Up against Lobo,
right.
You would have had a truer matchup and probably a more popular character than putting him up against the Demon, for God's sakes.
Yeah, in fact, his longevity was almost more of a happy accident.
Yeah.
Anything else.
So what was the worst of this group? I know I'm dwelling on Bloodlines, but I can't help it.
I don't know, because
the worst of them are so bad that they're completely unmemorable, but if I had to pick one, I would go with Loose Cannon, and just the worst.
Oh! Ouch!
Yeah, bad.
In Green Hulk.
Bad scene.
Yeah, when he gets emotional, he'll turn a color, and he has powers based on that, so... He would turn different colors. He was a Hulk of a different color.
He was a Hulk of a different color. Well played.
So yeah, he was really dumb. But there were three characters that stuck around for a little while. Hitman, of course, being the longest running. But the other two were Gunfire, who turned up a couple more times. He showed up in the Deathstroke annual, which at least makes some sense.
Yeah.
Right.
And the other one was Argus, who showed up in the Flash Angel, and he was a undercover agent, and he turned up a couple more times, I think involved in Checkmate or somewhere.
That would make sense.
That's another one, yeah, where you have a sensible kind of
thing going on there.
But at least...
It really felt like they spun a wheel and just snatched things off of it to make some of these characters. And Hitman, you know, unarguably the most popular one out of the whole damn bunch, he had telepathy and X-ray vision, which to me was kind of redundant. You can read people's minds, and you can see... So basically, you can find stuff out.
Right.
And I thought, you know, either one of those would have been fine by itself, but both together is a weird combination.
And like you said before the show started, one of the reasons that he remained popular and continued on was that the team that was actually creating him at the time was very strong. So that allowed him some traction. Because a lot of these, it seems like they kind of threw against the wall, and if there was no traction, they just let him fall to the ground, where if they would have put a decent creative team behind it, maybe there would have been something that came out of that.
Well, I think there was a part of that.
He was created by Garth Ennis.
So, right.
Yeah, that was sheer power of Garth Ennis. Right,
sheer force of will.
The idea was, by and large, that if we want to challenge these writers, and by and large, what they got was writers saying, I don't want to be challenged in this way.
Yeah.
This is a foolish way to challenge my skills.
Well, I would like...
I don't want to polish the turd. I want to be able to tell a compelling story. And if you give me a ridiculous character, I can't tell a compelling story.
I would like to know, though, whether that's true or if... Because in some respects, it seems like that's an accurate statement, you know? And then the flip side to that coin is, it almost seems to me like they went to these creators and said, hey, listen, we need new creations. If you've got anything kicking around in your head, if you've got any, if you've got anything in a sketchbook somewhere, bring it to me. We're going to put it in these annuals, and we're going to see what sticks. You know, like, oh, you've got this character that's a farmer during the potato famine that got powers of starch. Okay, let's flesh that out, and let's flesh that out, and put that in the book. Let's see if that sticks. We just need something, you know.
You may be right there, because if you're a creator, you know, doing work for hire for Marvel, and or you know, you're basically anything you come up with, they're going to own.
Right.
Why not give them your best work? Especially at that period, because we're getting to the point now where we're, you know, on the cusp of Image.
Right.
Or getting closer to that dynamic appearing.
Yes.
And I think I think a lot of them are like, what's that character I came up with when I was 12?
Yeah.
Well, I think you're both right on the beam here, because you have to put yourself in the logical position of a writer at that time operating under the rules of the day. If I create a character in this book, you own it, and I lose it. I'm not going to give you my baby. I'm going to give you the character I came up with that I really don't care about.
Right. But here's
the one that even I think is kind of dumb.
Exactly. We're going to put him in there.
It's really stupid. How about a hitman who gains telepathy and X-ray vision? How stupid could that be? That can't possibly last.
And all of a sudden, that's the one that sticks, and somebody's like, son of a bitch.
Legion of Superheroes had a Bloodlines annual, which, first off, 1,000 years in the future, how the hell did that happen? So they had to come up with a Bloodlines character and explain how he came up 1,000 years in the future. And I don't even remember this character very well, but they came up with a character named Jam, J-A-M-A.
Jam.
Jam, very important.
Oh, I thought it was he's a rad, R-A-D-D, but I think you're right, yeah.
Prodigious surfer dude.
Oh, that's right, yeah, because the cover, he's prodigious, dude. Oh, yeah, that's very Legion.
You're like, oh, no. Was this during Cole's favorite period in the Legion, where they all let go of their slave names and started wearing a lot of pouches?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think they were quite there yet.
I think it was still during the Geffen years. I don't know.
But at least this was a wake-up call. If anything came of Bloodlines, it was a wake-up call to DC to be like, guys, come on. Because the next couple years, they had some really solid annual crossover events. The next year was the Elseworlds.
I just have to point out, though, that during Bloodlines, I think, didn't you find that that was the same year that Marvel's annuals were all bagged with a trading card of a ridiculous new character?
Yes.
Yes. It's almost like Marvel said, oh, wait, we can do that worse. Instead of having an overarching plot, let's have no overarching plot. Let's just have everybody create a new character, and we'll put in, I don't know, a trading card or some crap like that and polybag it.
Yeah, well, you're going to polybag with a trading card of a Z-list character you will never care about in your life. And I was amazed, because this was during a period where we were working for, Catherine and I were working for Diamond, and I remember actually, you know, boxing these stupid things. And seeing the trading cards, like, oh, I wonder what ridiculous character this is. Oh, and here was one that I remembered the name from years earlier.
Oh, no.
About, like, 3 or 4 years earlier, maybe even longer than that, when I saw a list of upcoming Marvel titles. And at first, I'm thinking, what the hell? And then I had to look again, like, oh, no, that's not Batman. That's Bantam.
Yes.
The Battling Bantams.
And they were literally, there was a time where somebody thought it might be a good idea to...
He's a boxer.
Yeah.
Let's have him fight Captain America.
Well, they thought this was a character they wanted to actually give his own title prior to him eventually being remanded into being a throwaway in the annuals. So I was like, wow, I guess maybe somebody pointed out, you know, on the shelf that looks an awful lot like Batman. And that was not an uncommon ploy, because I remember there was a...
He had a hat with a rooster comb on it, for God's sake.
It was like one of those foam things you wear around your head so your cheeks and jaw don't get all messed up when you're sparring.
Yeah.
But it had, it had a cock on it.
Yeah.
And he had the big ass sparring gloves that like go all the way up your arm.
Yeah.
They're like the arm so version good. Of leg warmers, only padded for
so good.
People.
So good.
Yeah. But the funny thing was that
he had a chicken on his head.
That's well, I mean, the only reason he was Bantam was because they couldn't call him the cock.
That's true, and I'm glad that you were able to say that on the show. Oh my God, I remember. Okay, I just pulled up the list of all the characters
that's awful.
And the one that I remember, there were a couple actually that have stuck around. Yeah, there were a couple that have made the jump into and stuck around. One of them being, well, the one I remember that didn't stick around, but that I remember the most vividly, was a character named Annex, and he was in Spider-Man. Yeah, that one I remember pretty vividly. Bantam, of course. There was Krillin, or Killian, I think is how you pronounce it, from the Doctor Strange annual. He stuck around for a while. I wish that the Irish Wolfhound would have stuck around, but didn't.
The mind boggles.
But there were a few in here that actually kind of stayed around for a little while, I think.
They tried. They worked it, but
I remember
from Spider-Man was a vampire type female character. I think she might have stuck around.
The Cadre from Web of Spider-Man, I believe, ended up in Darkhold, the comic book for the in some of like the Blade and the Deacon Frost and all that, if I remember right, because they were like pseudo Eternals and had weird powers and yeah.
The big one I totally forgot about was from this Silver Surfer annual that you're introduced Legacy.
Oh,
Dennis Vell, Captain Marvel's son. That's where he came from.
Okay.
Interesting. So that was Will Strike.
Their version of Hitman.
Yeah, that's the one that made it out alive. Though, wasn't Killian still appearing in the Doctor Strange guy? I'm pretty sure he's still, and I think the reason is that there are so few mystical characters in the Marvel Universe, they've got to go to every well that they can when they can to do that. But I think he still appears pretty regularly.
One does get tired of seeing, Baron Mordo or Dormammu every single issue.
Yeah.
I mean, every now and again, you want your Despairs or your Mephistos to drop in.
So were there good annuals?
Once upon a time, yes. And probably since the crossover gimmick wore off.
Well, and the DC specifically, we were talking about this earlier, Bloodlines really seemed to do something. Bloodlines burned something out. And they said, hey, we've got to change it. So they went back to their previous idea of just having an overarching theme, but not crossing stories.
Right.
And they started turning out some really good annuals again.
Well, didn't they have an Elseworlds annual series?
That very next year?
Yeah, that was pretty amazing, if I remember right. Right.
There was some really
that
good
was very hit and miss, though, because I think a lot of writers just seem to be like, damn you.
They didn't know what to do with it.
Why should I have to do, like, let's do Rudyard Kipling's Superman.
Yeah. Not everybody's got an Elseworld story in them,
Well played, yes. That is so true.
But some of them were very good. That was a fun year. And the year after that was 95, and that was year one. So all the major characters got a year one issue.
Which is cool.
And those were hit and miss, too. There were some really good ones, but some of them were just like, I knew this already.
Yeah, exactly.
We know the story. Thanks.
How many times do we have to hear Batman's Year One?
Yeah, or Nightwing's, which was even more recent than Batman's Year One.
But interestingly enough, you're talking about, were there good annuals. Speaking of Nightwing, I can't remember if this was before or after Dick Grayson became Nightwing, but I'd forgotten that Vigilante made his first appearance in the New Teen Titans annual.
Ah.
And so that, was one of those times back when they weren't trying to tie everything together or have an overarching theme.
Right.
When an annual was still an annual.
Yeah, it was still a big deal event.
Oh, wait. I forgot one. And when we were talking about the Marvel weirdo 1993 crossovers, there's a couple of them that actually made it out, and I didn't even realize. You were saying Legacy stuck. He did. So did Executioner, if you remember right.
Oh, yes.
The X-Men villain, he stuck around. He still pops his head up from time to time, if I remember right. Didn't Extreme make his appearance here?
There were three X books that year. There's X Factor, X Force, and X Men.
But I think Extreme made it out in this one. If you remember Adam X, oh, so bad. But he stuck around. I'll give him that. So
yeah.
All right. Moving right along. Sorry.
The DC stuff picked up after that. They're year one. Then they took a dip in 96. They did something.
They went high concept.
Legends of the Dead Earth. And nobody knew what to do with that. It's like, tell dystopian stories in the future. And everybody said, I don't have one of those.
They're like, how well the Elseworlds books worked for y'all? Well, yeah, okay. Now you're relegated to not telling it through any time period. You have to tell it in a weird Maxian
Elseworlds story that's also a very specific targeted Elseworlds.
Right. Like, kiss my ass. Just kiss my ass.
Yeah.
The next year was my favorite. Actually, the next year was my favorite DC annuals next to the Ghosts ones that they did, which was the Pulp Heroes annuals. Those I thought were a hell of fun.
Yeah, they did some really fun ones, and the covers were gorgeous that year. Those were some really good covers.
Yeah,
I've seen several of the covers. I didn't really follow that one myself, but it's nice to know that did turn into something.
get.
So what's everybody's favorite annual series, and why? Oh, look, here's a Hitman annual number one. So apparently this is when Hitman finally made his appearance this year. Like, you know, I can say that the Pulp Heroes were some of my favorites, or that that the Ghosts that they did, which was actually the next year, was a really cool idea, and I really liked it. Later to be kind of revisited by the Blackest Night storyline a little bit. Kind of the same idea with a different approach. But what are your guys's? Like, I love annuals. I love the idea, even the bad ones. I absolutely love the fact that you can take a, you know, for the same reason that I think comic books are fun, is you take these ideas and these characters that have been created and established and have all this continuity, and then you give somebody free rein to break out and do what you want with them. And like you said, some of it's hit, some of it's miss. You know, it's not all good, but the ones that are good are really cool. And it gives you, like you said, a new perspective on new creators and things like that, too. So for me, it's the Ghost series, which was actually a really short series. It only had, like, 10 books in the company-wide crossover.
Yeah, some of those were really good. I don't remember them very well myself. But yeah, those were good ones. Wow, if I had to pick a theme that I thought worked best, I would go with the Elseworlds.
Yeah.
There were more hits than misses that time.
Yeah, this certainly had a stronger potential.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree with that.
And I will say this, I mean, we bag on it, you know, but I will go back and say this about the Armageddon 2001. The fun part of that crossover was when Wave Runner.
Oh,
yes.
Would touch a hero and then see their future, and it was like this weird alternate future. And they're always clear to make, you know, sure to make it clear to us that this is the potential future. And I thought, well, you've got a dumb power then, because you never find out anything useful. But some of those future looks were kind of fun.
What about...
I would go with Elseworld.
What about... does anybody remember Planet DC?
Wow, no.
Planet DC was another one where DC, I think, kind of realized that most of what they did was very America-centric, you know? Everything was America.
Okay.
And then they were... So they tasked their people with creating new characters and events that happened outside of America.
Yeah.
And I'm not even going to start on JLA. Oh my god. Where all the JLA were turned into apes. Like Planet of the Apes.
2000.
Okay.
Cole's like, okay. Yeah, so Planet DC, again, they went back to the well on this. And decided to create new characters. So I think we're noticing a theme in annuals. If you're going to try to create, don't do it through creative storytelling. Don't do it through an actual origin story that happens within continuity. Just do it in a weird annual that you don't have to that you can wash your hands of when it's done.
Disavow all knowledge.
Right. It's a wet works. It's a black ops.
Planet DC thing, I cringed at the concept of it because, you know, you're really skating on thin ice there when you're saying, hey, we're assigning a country to you. Do some research and make characters on it and try and make them not too racist.
or not too. The hardest thing, you know, a little off topic, is when you get characters that are like the characters of other countries. Because all the good names are taken, you either get a lot of captains or doctors or whatever with the country name tacked on.
Yeah.
Or you get things that are so, like, in the, Contest of Champions.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, well, you're from Ireland. You're going to be Shamrock. Or you're from, you're from Jerusalem. You know, you're Israelis. You're the Sabra. And it's sort of like, okay, you know, they do have other things in those countries, beyond, you know, I guess Shamrock should be lucky that she wasn't a potato or something.
Right.
Spud Muffin.
Spud Muffin! Irish Wolfhound?
Irish Wolfhound, yeah. Yeah. I think we have a new character for our universe here, which we already have Menshitsu, and now Spud Muffin will be an official part of the Hey Kids Comics universe.
Nice. We're coming close to building a team here.
Yeah, and once we do, we're going to have an annual crossover with all of our team members.
We are.
There you go.
And then it's going to be Elseworlds.
Bags of the trading cards.
I personally can't wait for the Menshitsu trading card.
I can't either. I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet, actually.
But this is also a reminder, shameless jab to Eddie Medina to finish, please grace us with the Menshitsu drawing.
Not only that, but if you could create a Fiesta Taco Spider-Man, which is another member of our universe.
Taco Spider-Man is probably the oldest character.
Yeah, he was the impetus of creation of universe here. He was the big bang of our universe.
He was born at Alcon and has inspired us ever since.
So where do we go from here, guys?
You know, I was curious, I was kind of poking around a little bit to see if anybody else, other publishers, ever did the annual thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't find a lot of examples of it. It looks like Fathom had an annual at one point, and I believe Gen 13 had an annual, which probably had probably was released over a period of 4 weeks during that month with seven different covers.
I was going to say the Fathom annual was just page after page of cover art.
Yeah,
that's all it was.
That's all every issue of Fathom.
Well, and most of the other publishers just don't have the number of titles needed to do a company-wide crossover. You know, if you're a small press company and you're only putting out three books, come on, do a company-wide crossover and make a big deal out of it. It's just three books.
Well, who was it that has Transformers? It was IDW. Was it an annual or just a crossover? They've done two now. They did one with zombies and one with Cthulhu, where it had the Transformers and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and a couple of their other books, their licensed books. It was really a cool idea. And I can't remember.
I think it was called Infestation or something like that.
Right.
But it wasn't just their books. This was something that other publishers crossed into as well. And I know that because I worked at Ape Entertainment, and they had just finished a crossover with Pocket God.
Huh.
So one of the issues of Pocket God, the character from the IDW series popped up on the Pocket God Island and interacted with the characters from that book and then popped off at the end of it.
Ah.
Interesting.
Very strange issue. But they created a character just for that purpose that they could send to other publishers, and you just had to use her a certain way and send her back when they're done.
It was leased. It was on loan.
Yeah, you can't keep her,
Sort of like character Immoratus for jumping from title to title.
So here's a big annual crossover thing that we didn't even talk about. There are two big Marvel DC annuals events that we haven't touched on that are worth talking about. And they're the two different times that Marvel and DC publish together.
Oh! Sorry, that was the sound of me actually getting a kidney stone when you said that. Oh, damn it. Damn it. Damn it. I blacked out. What were you saying?
Amalgam for another show.
No, yeah, I have to understand, you're not familiar with Andrew's history on the show. and which barbs hurt the most?
Oh, the first cut is the deepest, Amalgam. First cut is the deepest. Dr. Strange Fate, you can kiss my ass. That's all I'm saying.
Speed Demon.
Dark Claw.
Ghost Rider. The Flash. That's two characters that go together.
Right? And the demon.
The logic there was literally, well, they're both fast.
Yeah.
Well, this, I think the worst was, like, who do we have left in the, you know, who haven't we pulled out of the hat? Looks like Wonder Woman and Punisher remain.
Yeah, that was a weird book. That one was a weird book.
They gave us bullets and bracelets for because bullets and bracelets, apparently.
Was it Wonder Woman and Punisher and Orion and Elektra? I forget the weird combination there. In. It was really bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah, but thank you for removing another 2 days of sleep from me. I appreciate that.
What I couldn't believe they didn't do, though, was the very obvious crossover between Captain America and Wonder Woman. They both wear essentially the same costume.
Yeah. And I
wish they did.
They really wanted Superman and Captain America. Sometimes they were, you know, trying very hard to be complimentary, and then I guess they ran out of characters to compliment each other and then just started, like, tossing two characters against the wall like so much spaghetti.
No, there were some. There were some decent. There were some decent books to come out of that. Out of that run of things. It hurts me to say so, but it's a true statement. Their depiction of Kingpin was pretty cool, if you remember right. Dr. Doomsday was kind of fun, like Doom combined with Doomsday. Like, it was dumb fun. It was dumb and fun. You didn't like the Metal Men, though, if I remember right. Cause...
Yeah, the Metal Men thing was just sort of, was it Magneto and the Metal Men or something like that?
Yes.
Man.
Yeah.
And it just was so uninspired because, you know, all the good metals had been used. And, you know, Professor Magnus had already used all the good metals.
Right.
And, you know, what did he have left? Like bismuth and... I forget.
Yeah, bismuth was antimony, bismuth, cobalt, iron, corcoro.
Yeah, it was like one of those things that you used to...
Antimony.
And nickel.
You know, you used to buy, like, in the 50s, where it was like a little box with a tiny little sample of about 26 different minerals. And it was like somebody had one of those. Well, what do you got left here? Well, there's this powdery stuff here called bismuth. Let's go with that.
And you know the ones that really bothered me were the one like the Mariner, because either they went so insane with their combinations that it didn't make sense, or they just went for the taters. You know, just the completely obvious ones, where you could have made it at least a little more interesting than being like, yeah, Namor and Aquaman. Like, really? That's what you're going to go with? That's the most obvious thing you possibly could go with. Do something at least a little creative.
You know, Aquaman and Magneto would be like Tidal.
Right. There's just so many. The thing was, there were so many options.
I will say, yeah.
Go ahead.
I will say this, though. X Patrol, it was kind of clever. I didn't think it was the best book in the whole world, but just the idea that they took the X Factor characters in Doom Patrol and mashed them together was kind of funny.
But also that they gave Doom Patrol some coverage, you know, that alone.
Right. They definitely are the bottom of the pile.
Yeah. They're not the ones that are, you know, top of the list when you're calling somebody.
Yeah.
Well, that's because they don't have a phone.
They're almost like that gang in The Warriors, the Orphans.
Oh, here we go.
They don't even get told there's a giant gang meeting about taking over the city.
The poor guys.
They come to the New Warrior, to the Doom Patrol's territory, and they're like, yeah, if there was such a thing, we'd have known about it. Well, yeah, don't be so sure.
Well, I'm sorry you didn't know. You pass them going one way, and they're going the other. Like, oh, God, nope, everything seems to be fine. Okay.
Nothing to see here, kids. So, you know, God bless them.
Well, yes. Yeah. Challengers of the Fantastic, that was kind of a clever title.
Right.
Enough similarities there that warranted something interesting. But then they would turn around and do something that made you go, what?
Right. Yeah, that was dumb. That was
what
dumb.
What the hell?
That one was done.
The, there was the occasional one where you could tell, now you're just jacking with me. Lobo's a duck.
Yep.
Yeah. Because
you're not even trying now. You're just trying to piss me off.
The thing about Lobo the Duck is, if you're familiar, which most people weren't, with Howard the Duck, it was really well-written, biting social commentary. Lobo was not.
Right.
And nary the twain shall meet. There was no common ground whatsoever. It was just
an
excuse to, like, when they were like, okay, what do we want to do this next round? Everybody liked Dark Claw, so let's piss them off by doing an animated series adaptation.
Right.
The one thing that they did do during Amalgam that was pretty cool that they got kind of right was they did little one-off characters that would often be just in the background of a story or kind of, you know, and those characters oftentimes were pretty cool where they weren't the chief character in the story, but they were, you know, either like a third villain or something like that. Like Deadeye. I remember Deadeye being Deadshot and Bullseye. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
They had a lot of little characters like that that when given the opportunity to do something cool, they took it. But the main impetus of each book, I think that about three quarters of them were just kind of like, come on, guys, are you serious? Like this is just dumb. Like, you guys are doing dumb things on purpose. You're doing it on purpose. That's the thing that bothers me.
Stop being dumb.
So you're trying to hurt me.
Well, and Spider Boy was one that I thought was going to be dumb, and it turned out to be better than I thought.
Yeah.
Spider-Man and Superboy. And then took it a step further and brought him into the future with a version of the Legion of Superheroes.
Oh, that's right. Well, I guess he felt the Legion was left out of the game.
Yeah. And then in the Legion, he meets Spider-Boy 2099.
Of course he does.
Yeah, Spider-Boy 2099 was an amalgam of Mono and Spider-Man 2099. And I was like, okay, that's
kind of
clever.
All right, I'll give it to you. I don't want to give it to you, but I'm going to give it to you.
Yeah, I'll give you that one.
I really liked the other cool thing about when you do something like Amalgam or a lot of the annuals is you get a different story, you get a different art style and a different storytelling style that you didn't have, that you don't have in, like, the regular books that you read. Like, if I remember right about the Spider-Boy story, it was sort of like I don't remember who did it, but it was sort of a Kirby-inspired. It had a lot of, like, Kirby-inspired art in it that I thought was really cool. I actually really liked the art in that book. Am I crazy or high and remembering things wrong, or am I sort of close? Because I'm pulling that one from memory.
Maybe correct, but I haven't seen it in so long. Yeah,
I'm pulling that one sort of from memory.
Ladrin did the art. Yes, and he did look very Kirby. That's Spider Boy team up you're thinking about.
Oh, okay,
the first time I think. Yeah.
But
Ladrin has a very pronounced Kirby flavor to him.
But it did introduce me to a lot of artists. Things like this always introduce me to a lot of artists that I either end up liking or I don't like, you know, but they're people that I had never heard of before, so kudos to annuals for that.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, when an annual's at its best, that's one of the things they can do, is expand their universe and show you things you haven't seen before. But when they're doing the huge enforced company-wide crossover, that gets lost.
And I can't think of a better way. I can't think of a better way to start wrapping up the show than that. That was
absolutely.
That's pretty spot on there. So does anybody have any final thoughts outside of the brilliance that was just laid upon us about annuals?
Cole?
Thank God they only come once a year.
It's like
very true.
It's like Christmas with the family in linear art form, like linear storytelling form. It's like, God, okay, here it comes. Well, that wasn't so bad. I guess I can do it again next year. If you drink enough,
like
you can get through it.
I think that there's going to... that the folly of the enforced themes and storyline crossovers and all of that is behind us. I really don't know what's going on in annuals nowadays, but I really hope that that's behind us, and the creators can, you know, either the running creators can tell a unique story every year, or, you know, enhance an existing one, or else, you know, a secondary creative team can come in and do what would effectively be a little one shot that may not be entirely inside of continuity. These are the sorts of things I think that really help push a title, a group of characters forward in satisfying ways.
Yeah. I can't agree more. And I wanted to inform you about what DC is doing with their crossover events. They do have, or their annuals. They do have annuals. Their annuals are, I don't know how mandated they are, but they're part of the Forever Evil story event. At least they were earlier this year, as part of the New 52, where they were really pushing the bad guys. But it was good.
Yeah.
But they were for all intents and purposes very good crossovers. I mean, that's the thing about when I bitched and groused and moaned about the New 52 when it came out, and actually I didn't do it that badly, but when I did, they really proved to me that they were going to put all of the effort they could behind good storytelling and making good books, at least in the most part, and being proactive about dropping books that weren't doing that well and introducing new books, and this is another case of that. From all intents and purposes, everything I've read and talked to people about, the annuals for DC have been really, really well received.
Well, good. So the days of Bloodlines are behind us.
I wouldn't go that far. Marvel still exists.
Yeah, that's what we're
All right, well, guys, I want to thank you very much for having me on the show.
I like Walton's going to wrap the show for us. That's awesome. Man, he's on it.
We're going to play it off our own stage. This is great.
I didn't realize the Oscar music could play on our own show.
On the show.
Right. So do you have any plugs for us, man? Anything that you're up to? Anything you're doing? Anything you want people to read or be a part of?
I am currently working with Heritage Auctions, and we are auctioning off some amazing stuff. So check the Heritage Auctions website and the comics and animation art section and see what all is up there. I have this phenomenally cool job where on any given day I may be cataloging in original Jack Kirby artwork or animation cells from 1940s Warner Brothers.
So cool.
Or I might be dealing with painted Simon Bisley covers. You never know what I'm going to have on my desk. So just a new thing every day.
That is so amazing. That is awesome. So there you go. Heritage Auctions website. Check it out. Cole, do it up.
All right. Well, as always, we're coming to you through the courtesy of the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com, home of this podcast. Every week, except the few times that we don't get around to managing to make it every week. We have, of course, the Rantcore Pit every other Sunday, and the Rantcore Pit Live on the Sundays where we don't have the pre-recorded Rantcore Pit. The live show goes out at 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. every other Sunday on Deep Ellum on Air, and the archive is available on the Jedi Cole Universe. You can also listen to a movie review, more a conversation about a movie than a review with Mrs. Jedi Cole and Bobby Blakey on What'd You Think? And my co-host from the Rancor Pit, Eddie Medina, he and his wife have the Figments podcast as well. Amongst a number of other podcasts, we have a brand new one coming up very soon called Do It Yourself, and I'm going to leave it at that.
You probably should, because I can talk about it.
PJ Dunn, a new podcaster joining the JCU network very, very soon. Apologies to PJ for this taking so damn long to happen. But so goes when there's so darn much going on. And so be sure to check out Jedi Cole Universe. And if you're keen on conventions in the state of Texas, be sure to visit Convention Awareness Project Texas, which is my little pet project to help keep you informed of what conventions are going on in the Lone Star State. At Convention Awareness TX.blogspot.com, because you can't go if you don't. know.
That's right. So until next week, Weldon, thank you so much for being on the show. That was inspirational and awesome and cool and fun and so cool and so fun. Yeah, I'm repeating myself.
Well, every bit of what I had in mind when I thought, who could possibly talk up annuals and know off the top of their head more than Andy and I combined? And, well, who else but Weldon Adams?
That's right.
And so, beyond any expectations I may have had, thank you again very much.
My pleasure.
And we'll wrap this up the same way we do every issue. Wait, first of all, Cole, what's next week?
Spud Muffin.
Spud Muffin's next week. We'll talk about Spud Muffin next week.
Next week is, let me see here, post-pubescent. let me see.
How do you say it?
Post-pubescent genetically altered martial arts animal species.
Read into that what you will.
Special guest, Eddie Medina.
It's whom we will discuss making trading cards for Manshitsu, and now Spud Muffin as well. as always, buy, collect, enjoy comic books. Head over to the Heritage Auction House website. Look at the cool stuff that Weldon's doing. Go over to Jedi Cole Universe. Check out the cool stuff that he's doing. I'm just going to sit here thinking about doing it myself. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you next week.